Last month at an Advertising Week event in New York, I had the chance to sit down with a legend of public radio and of good conversation. Terry Gross has hosted Fresh Air since 1975. She still brings listeners daily conversations about news and books, film and science. Today on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR, we're sharing an edited version of that conversation. You'll hear that after a break.
Think of NPR's Life Kit as that friend who always has great advice about everything from how to invest to how to get a great workout. We bring you tools to help you get it together. New episodes every Tuesday and Thursday. Listen and subscribe to Life Kit All Guides.
So for people who might not be as familiar with the way daily radio is made, what is the sort of quick and dirty version of what your schedule looks like putting together a week of Fresh Air working with your staff?
Well, we have several producers. Well, you know, one producer handles books. We have a couple of producers who handle movies and TV. It's impossible to keep up with movies and TV now. And a news producer. And they're spending their days just looking for good stuff to talk about. And then I kind of jump in and give a cursory look to all the materials they're looking at to see who should be on the show. We have these interminably long meetings deciding who should be on the show. Sometimes the guests are pre-interviewed just to see, like, do they speak well? Do you want to hear them? Because if somebody sounds kind of like this on the air, no matter what story they have to tell, you're not going to want to listen. And I've interviewed people who have experienced the most amazing things and they've been boring. And then I've interviewed people who are basically talking about small things and they've made it fascinating because some people know how to speak and tell a story and sadly some people don't. It's something you have to adjust to on radio. You know, like some people say, everybody's got a great story. I mean, actually, everybody doesn't have a great story that you want to share on the radio. And that's part of the hard thing about doing a show like Fresh Air is that you're always saying no to people. We do just a few interviews a week. And for every interview we do, there's a whole lot of people who we've said no to, who've like knocked on our door and they want to be on the show. That's something I found very hard to do at first because being a woman, you know, growing up when I did, being a girl, like, you want to be liked. You want to be. You're socialized to be liked, to be nice, and suddenly you're saying no to people. It's hard.
Yeah, I heard an interview with you in 2017, and you were talking about making some changes to the prep that you did at that time, so that you were not trying to digest every page of every book in great agonizing detail. And those seemed to be at that time fairly fresh changes to your process. How did it go?
I'm kind of back to reading the books.
That takes up a lot of time.
Yes, it does.
You read a lot of books.
I do. No, it's hard. And I have come up with my own way of reading them where I kind of read each page really quickly and then circle things that I want to remember and want to take notes on. And then I dog ear that page. And when I'm done going through all those pages, then I take notes on everything I've dog eared. And it's a really long process. Then I read articles afterwards. So, and then I try to pretend like I'll get enough sleep knowing that I won't. I try not to panic about that.
Yeah. So when you're doing that amount of prep, it seems to me that now a person who is particularly an artist, a musician or something like that, or an actor, is likely to have done kind of put a lot more personal content out into the world than maybe they would have at some point. They've appeared on, as you know, every human being is issued a podcast at birth now. So they've appeared on, if they don't have their own podcast, their friends' podcasts, they have an Instagram account. How does it change the conversations that you have with people when there's already very often a big, big supply of their personal voice out there?
Well, one is I tell myself that not everybody in our audience has spent their year listening to my guests be interviewed. So that I have to kind of tell myself that to move forward. But then I try to read or listen to some of the things that are out there and go a step deeper. And instead of like repeating what I've already read, say, like, you've said that blah, 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 but what about yada, yada, yada? Or, you know, just like take what's already out there and try to get a step further with it.
Yeah.
That's the dream anyways.
I want to talk to you a little bit about your conversation with Lizzo, which I thought was
yes.
Very interesting. Lizzo is, if you don't know Lizzo, musician. she pushed back on a couple of sort of the premises of the questions that you were asking her, some of which had to do with her, for example, she and you had really different ideas about what it means for a woman to be naked on an album cover, right? It struck her as a really different thing than it did you. What are you thinking when that starts to happen in an interview? How are you balancing, I don't want to make this about myself, but I want to engage with what she's challenging about the question?
And just to give a little more detail about that, so Lizzo is into body positivity, and which is great. And she's naked on her album cover. She's she's a large woman. Her dancers are large too, and it's a point of pride. But for me, growing up when I did, in the earlier days of the women's movement in the late 60s and early 70s, being nude on the album cover, being nude in a context where you're actually selling something, always struck me and a lot of other young women at the time as being exploitive, because we were used to, if a woman's nude or if she's partially dressed, it's to sell stuff to men. It's all about the male gaze. And okay, so women have taken control now and they're putting themselves out there. But sometimes I'm not always comfortable with it because it still feels like, no matter what the intent you're putting out with, it still might be perceived differently. It's a very confusing issue, and I love having generational conversations and dialogues about that, because I think it's really important that feminists of different generations understand where we're all coming from, because I think the bottom line is we all agree that our bodies are our own and they shouldn't be used by other people to exploit things. But then she also really challenged me on body positivity, because I had said that it was a bold statement for her to picture herself naked on the cover, because typically people who are large aren't naked on things to sell them. And I think of an album cover as being a sales thing, maybe inappropriately. But
no, I think that's right.
And so everybody was tweeting, Terry said Lizzo was brave in putting herself on, and I said bold, I didn't say brave. And I felt like the whole conversation, in a way, got hijacked by one word, which was bold instead of brave. And I think they have two, in my mind, two subtly different meanings.
Yeah. But here's the interesting thing what I was thinking about when I listened to that interview is that in some ways, her reaction to the premises of the question, and this has happened in other interviews that you've done, certainly with Ta-Nehisi Coates and other people. Part of what it does, I think, is it shines a little bit of a light on the idea in journalism of it's not about me, I'm just doing the interview, is based on the idea of a kind of completely neutral, point of view free person asking questions. And I think when she pushed back on that, it really demonstrates that everybody has a point of view. And you have a kind of feminism that you sort of have a lot of experience with. And just like you're saying, and it's just it was interesting to me, because I think when you get into that and when you have a guest who's saying the question that you're asking is based on a premise that I don't agree with, it changes kind of what your role is. And I know that journalists never want it to turn into a thing that's about themselves and their point of view.
Well, I think cultural journalism, when you're dealing with artists, I think it's really different than when you're dealing with politics. In politics, I feel like it's my job to be neutral, but to challenge misrepresentation and lies. But with people in culture, unless you are passionate, unless you connect to the material, why the hell are you talking to this person? Like, the meaning of art is that it means something to you, that it brings out something to you, that it makes your life better, that, it makes you connect to people who are like you and to people who aren't like you, that it brings you pleasure, that it's reflective, all of that. And unless you can express that in your questions, then what's the point? And with somebody like Lizzo, like I said, I like that kind of dialogue. And I think it actually makes for really good radio when there's pushback. I don't mind when somebody pushes back at me, because I think it adds a little drama. And also, I think it opens up the door for more understanding, in this case, more understanding generationally about what it means to be nude on your album cover. And also maybe a dialogue about body positivity.
that's not a problem to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just don't like getting misinterpreted on Twitter when people are quoting things that you didn't say.
Yeah, that's a that's a hard one, I think, for everybody and very common. When you talk about the interviews that are really great because you have that kind of dialogue, you obviously have had some interviews. I don't know if you know this. You probably do. Your Wikipedia page has an entire section on difficult interviews.
Oh, right. Yes.
The sort of the notoriously difficult interviews, the Gene Simmons and the Bill O'Reilly and things like that. Those are the ones that everyone else thinks of as difficult. Are there interviews or kinds of interviews that you think of as having been difficult that really are challenging for you that don't necessarily, that aren't necessarily of that someone being really rude to you kind of brand, but that to you are really challenging and difficult?
Well, some of the really hard interviews are the ones where you're interviewing a journalist about a really complicated subject and you're trying to simplify it and clarify it for listeners, but the subject is so complicated, it's hard to figure out how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So that would be one example.
Yeah.
When somebody is a well-known writer, and maybe I've only read one of their books, and I have a lot to catch up on, because people are going to be all over you unless you really know your stuff, like, that makes it really hard.
Yeah.
Or, nowadays, people, how long is your book?
My book?
Mm-hmm.
300 pages. And by the way, Fresh Air is on, like, page 15, so.
Oh.
Just saying.
So, a lot of the books are, unlike Linda's, way longer than 300. I mean, I get these 500 and 600 page books I'm supposed to digest, and I just feel like, where are the editors? It didn't really need to be this long.
Yes, make it shorter was make probably shorter. The biggest function of my editor.
Yeah.
I would agree with that. Are there interviews that are difficult for you because of the regard that you have for the person that you're interviewing?
Yes.
I read you talking about Stephen Sondheim one time, that those can be very difficult. Because it seems to me that engaging with someone as a sort of a, like, what's it like to be so awesome is actually not necessarily the most interesting way to engage with an artist, but it's very hard not to.
I kind of learned that tell somebody before the interview starts how much you admire them and then let it go, because they want to be interviewed by a professional and not by the head of their fan club or, worse yet, a stalker. So I try to, like, really, truly express how much their work means to me and then just kind of move on and do the interview. But register, you know, I try to register whatever knowledge I have, not in a show-offy way, but just like in an, yeah, I get it, this is what your work is about kind of way, to help them feel confident. Because I've learned that, you know, you open up to people when you feel comfortable.
Yeah.
That you're giving your story to somebody who's going to respect it and comprehend it. One of the first times I was interviewed, somebody asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up. And I said, a lyricist. And she said, no, tell me something interesting. Right.
That's not interesting?
Yeah. And I thought, like, okay, I think, you know, I wasn't going to walk out like some guests do to me. But I felt like we might as well wrap it up, because honestly, if that's the kind of regard you're going to have for things that I actually care about, like, where is this going to go?
Yeah. Do you find that people come to be interviewed by you and you have to deal with that same kind of, they're overwhelmed by the idea, Terry Gross is interviewing me, I've always wanted to be on Fresh Air. Do you have ways of diffusing that angle?
I think I just stammer a few times and it's done. It's sometimes when somebody's really a big fan, it stands in their way, because if they're not used to being interviewed, but they're a fan of the show, they're just thinking of all the famous people. They're thinking of Lizzo, and they're thinking of Hillary Clinton, and, you know, John Updike and Philip Roth and Johnny Cash and people like that. And it's like, no, we're having you on because you're you. Like, you don't have to pretend to be someone else. Like, there's a couple of comics I've interviewed, and I know that they're putting on their, like, public radio persona. They think they have to be, like, smart and high-cultured.
Yes.
And it's like, take that off.
Yes.
Just be you. Stop. You know?
I think you get people into a public radio studio, and they feel like, now I'm not supposed to speak casually. Now I'm not supposed to be too loud. I'm not supposed to
laugh.
And
it's not true.
It's not true at
all. It's just a stereotype that some people have that just isn't true. And if you listen to NPR, you know it isn't true. Maybe it once was true.
Mm-hmm.
It's not true now.
Yeah. No, I agree. And we've run into the same thing when we sometimes had people on our podcast, kind of working them into that idea of, no, you're supposed to be just exactly like your regular self. That's how we picked you for this. How often do you listen back to your show? Always? Never?
I don't really like listening back to myself. I had a book of interviews that was published, back in 2004, and I had to listen back to all these interviews to decide what was going to be in the book, and God, that was hard. It was really not fun at all. Yeah, I find it hard to hear myself, but at the same time, I feel it's necessary to hear at least some of the interviews so I know, like, how's it being edited? What did I do wrong? How can I sound better? You know?
Yeah. How do you continue to make a show that you've been hosting for this long interesting for yourself? Continue to challenge yourself? Has there ever been pressure to change anything? Do you have to manage that?
What keeps it interesting for me is that there's always something new. Like the art of interviewing or the craft of interviewing stays kind of the same, but who you're talking to, what the subject is, what you're going to ask them, that's all different. Every day, that's completely different. And for someone like myself, and I'm sure Linda, who spends a lot of their time like in front of screens, watching movies, going to movie theaters, listening to a lot of music, reading a lot of books, and I've always been like that. So much as I complain about having to read books that are too long, I've always read a lot of books. It's kind of what I want to be doing. So no, it doesn't get boring or seem like the same old thing, because if I wasn't doing the show, what would I be doing? I'd be going to movie theaters, listening to music, and reading books. What I wouldn't have is the ability to talk to the author and the filmmaker and the actor and the musician.
Yep. One of the things that I've said about my job is that the best thing about it is that even when I'm working, I'm 25% doing what I enjoy. And the worst thing about my job is that even when I'm doing what I'm enjoying, I'm 25% working. Because there's always that little bit of overlap. So I didn't get into doing radio until I was in my late 30s. I never was on a microphone, never did any of that stuff. But I really found that it is, just like audio people always say, it is a really special and intimate and unusual thing. What do you think it is about audio and recording that has kept you in that world for your entire career?
I feel so comfortable being invisible. It's my favorite way to be. And in radio, you can engage with ideas, you can talk to people, you can play records, you can live in the space I want to live in without worrying about clothes, hair, makeup, all the stuff that is like, if you're on TV, that stuff is really time consuming. I'm like less than 5 feet. This jacket, I am really proud to own it. It was really hard to get it. It fits me. Most things don't. And like when I've done TV, I've spent more time hopelessly shopping for clothes than I've spent preparing for the interviews. And another thing about TV now, there is so much pressure on women and men too to have like work done on your face. And like the thought of having to do that to keep your profession makes me sad. So I love the invisibility of radio. Bodies are wonderful. They cause problems too. It's great to just live in people's minds. And also, in TV, like you have to go into TV's world. In radio, in the audio space, you're bringing it to your world because you're doing something while you're listening. And radio enhances the thing that you're doing as opposed to preventing you from doing the thing. You're walking, you're jogging, you're working, you're cooking, you're pretending like you're sleeping, whatever.
In your show specifically, people are usually remote. They're usually not in the studio with you.
Right.
And I've heard you say that there is something about somebody who's just in your ears and not in the room that has its own intimacy.
It does. I mean, it's like they're being piped right into your brain. There is something very intimate about that. And sometimes when the person's sitting across the room from me, I almost feel like it's not as intimate as when they're far away. But sometimes it's great to have them across the room. So it really depends on the conversation. But yeah, having them go right in your brain.
Yeah. How do you think, other than the fact that a lot of people are remote because you're not in New York or LA, how do you think it has affected fresh air that it comes out of Philadelphia?
Well, you know, it's nice to operate on our own little world. We're an NPR distributed show, but we're not at NPR headquarters. And so we don't feel like we're competing as much. We do our thing and hope it's good. I love New York, but Philly is a much kind of quieter city, so that's nice too. I can get to New York to see a show or to do an event or, you know, whatever. It's not that hard to do. It's worked out well, and the better the technology gets, the more it doesn't matter where you are, because we can hook up to places all around the world. You know, Dave Davies, who does some interviews on our show, just interviewed Edward Snowden from his room in Moscow, because Edward Snowden understandably didn't want to go to a studio where he could easily be bugged. I won't explain the setup, but it worked really nicely.
Yeah. I have found that public media has been surprisingly resilient in the all the media changes that have happened in the last maybe 20 years. What do you think people are coming to public media for? How do you think about that relationship between listeners and you in a way that's kind of specific to maybe public radio? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing, like on our show, what we do is long form interviews. I think that's a unique kind of thing because, first of all, you can get somebody talking way beyond the sound bites and get them to reflect or be funny or whatever your goal is in that interview. Also, I think for people who want more than the sound bites, NPR has always been the place to go in the world of audio. And for years, God, we had no competition. It used to amaze me. I used to think, like, why aren't commercial radio people picking up on what we do? Why do we have no competition at all for news shows like All Things Considered and Morning Edition and shows like This American Life and shows like Fresh Air? Like, people love that stuff. Why isn't... But now with podcasts, there's more of it. But I still think that NPR has a very special place because, one, we've been at it for a while. We really know how to do it. And also, you know, when it comes to shows like the new shows, like All Things Considered and Morning Edition, like podcasts can't do that. They don't have reporters all over the world. And like a show like ours, we've been at it a long time, and we don't have a hard time getting big name guests. And if you're just starting out on a podcast, I think it's really hard to do. So like reputation can really work in your favor when you're doing an interview show and trying to land big names as well as people who are just coming up who aren't famous yet.
Yeah, people take your calls, probably.
Yeah, yeah.
Take the calls.
Or more like returning emails.
Yeah. Do you ever think to yourself, I feel like going in today and I don't feel like saying fresh air with my usual, like, fresh air.
Of course.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Is it ever just like a more, I don't feel it today?
You know, that's where professionalism comes in. No, seriously, it's like you don't wake up every morning and go like, God, isn't it great? I get to work really hard and do a show again today and not have a day off. Oh. You know, because sometimes like you'd go for the day off if you could.
Yeah.
But, you know, at the same time, you're a professional. You have every morning I wake up and I think this might be a big day in my guest life, either because they're not used to doing interviews or because they have a new book or a new movie. And it's important for them to present their best self, their best public self. And if I blow it, that means they've blown it. And also, I have listeners who are going to be tuning in. And if they tune in and they're bored or disappointed, I'm letting them down. And I'll have that many fewer listeners. So there's a lot at stake all the way around. So even if I'm not like in the mood to do an interview and host the show, it's like I'll get in the mood.
Mm-hmm. All right, we're going to start looking at some of these questions. Is there somebody who you haven't interviewed but would love to interview? Somebody who's still on your get list?
I should have an answer to that. You know, it's no longer just about like the big names. We've had on a lot of big names. One thing that really excites me is finding new people like Phoebe Waller-Bridge, who got all those Emmys last night. She was on our show like months ago before Fleabag had caught on the way it did. And she wasn't this like multi-Emmy winner, and she was just great. And that was like so much fun to do. So that's the kind of thing that excites me.
Yeah. How do you build comfort and familiarity when interviewing famous people?
I think the best way of doing it is by showing that you know and care about the work through the questions that you ask. Because if you start fawning all over them, it's not the best way of making them comfortable. And if you just start showing off, that's not going to make them comfortable either. But if you can honestly reflect in the conversation you have that you care about the work and you're trying to make it interesting and exciting for the listeners who might not know their work or for the listeners who already love their work, then I think that's what's going to win their confidence.
Yeah.
Trust.
Who do you like to listen to doing interviews?
I like to listen to Long Form as a show that has good interviews on it. And they're also long form. They mostly interview writers and journalists. I've listened to a lot of Marc Maron interviews because he does his own thing. He has his own unique style, which is very enjoyable. I love like This American Life, and I especially like it when Ira does something. I listen to Pop Culture Happy Hour a lot. Now, their thing isn't really interviews. It's more of three pop culture obsessives who watch and listen to everything, sitting around talking about what the one work of the week that's on the table, and then usually ending it with their favorite thing of the week, the thing that's making them happy that week. And to me, that is just great fun because being as absorbed in pop culture as I am, to hear Linda and her co-hosts and guests talk about some of the same things I'm listening to and watching, or that I ought to be listening to and watching, is just wonderful for me. I also spend a lot of time listening to the news. And one thing I have to say, I don't talk about my politics in public because I like to maintain political neutrality as somebody who functions in a, you know, kind of journalistic capacity. But I feel like Donald Trump has deprived me of some of my cultural life, because I have to spend so much time paying attention to the news. There's such huge news stories every day. It's cutting down on my music life and my television life. And if I may say this, President Trump, I really resent you for that.
Mm-hmm. I was very thrilled, by the way, when you told me that we helped you find Succession.
Yes, you did.
Because Succession is a very good show.
I knew it was there. I just didn't realize I would like it.
Yeah, that was thrilling to me. We got a question about your, related to your James Comey interview that I think more broadly is about how do you go about the interview where the person is very much in a kind of very political spotlight. How are those interviews different if they are?
Those are really hard because you're not going to turn down James Comey. At the same time, you know that the night before you interview him, he's going to have an interview on 60 Minutes that's going to be most of the show. And all the major talking points are going to be in that interview. And you have to hit some of the major talking points because, again, all of your listeners will have been watching 60 Minutes the night before. And there's things you absolutely have to talk about, but you want to get beyond it. And you want to get beyond the book. And it's interviews like that where I always feel like, have I really gotten beyond it? And then you know that there's all these things that he literally can't talk about because it's classified. So that's going to be frustrating too.
Right. You know, it occurs to me, you were talking a few minute ago about current politics and the devouring of parts of your cultural life. And I wonder, because I do this, whether you ever think to yourself, is it enough what I'm doing? Like what I'm doing with my life, talking to people about culture, talking to people about their art. Is it enough given a world that often seems full of emergencies?
Well, we cover the emergencies too. I mean, we have the journalists on who are breaking the news and doing the long form reporting. So I feel like we're out there covering what's going on in our country now. And we have an ongoing dialogue about the Trump administration, about immigration, about racial divisiveness in our country, about this underlying current of white supremacy in our country. I feel like we're doing the best we can of balancing what you're describing as like the emergencies in our country, right, while also covering art, I mean like popular culture, because I think that stuff at its best is really nourishing, whether it's comedy or poetry or a reflective movie or a memoir about religion. I mean, these things matter and they shouldn't be drowned out. So we're proud to still give a platform to culture and to the people who are creating the books and movies and TV. Like, it's important.
Yeah.
To me, anyways. It's very important to me. It, you know, I can't imagine my life without that.
Yeah. Absolutely agree, obviously, and hope it is enough from my point of view, even without the breaking news journalists. But
well, you're what I turn to.
Yeah.
On the weekend.
No, that's true. That's true. Everybody does their part. Have you ever been truly speechless during an interview?
Kind of. Yeah. I mean, my go-to on that is when I was interviewing Gene Simmons, who I didn't expect him to be as crazy as he was. And when he said, "If you want to welcome me with open arms, you'll also have to welcome me with open legs." Yeah, I was kind of speechless. I thought, like, you know, what do you say to that? So after contemplating that for a moment, I said, like, wow, you're really obnoxious, aren't you?
It did seem, and I've heard some of that tape, it did seem like you guys were at a little bit of an impasse, right? Because he's doing...
Please.
Well, because he's doing his thing, and he's not going to not do it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And you're not going to indulge it. So now you're at what I'm calling an impasse. The famous impasse with Gene Simmons is what I'm saying.
Well, this was in around 2002. Thank you. And this was before social media. We weren't even sure if we'd run the interview. You're calling it an impasse, but to me it was kind of like he's talking to me as if I'm this stereotype that he's created of NPR,
probably
without ever having listened to it,
for sure.
Saying things to me like, you've got to get away from all those dusty books. I bet you're the life of the party, or something that's sarcastic like that.
Yeah.
And I just kept trying to call him out for being, you know, obnoxious without, like, wagging my finger like a schoolmarm, without saying, like, young man, if you're going to be rude, we'll have to terminate this interview, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I even said to him, is this just some kind of persona that you do? Is this some kind of shtick that you do when you talk to women? Are you this obnoxious all the time? So I tried to, like, you know, push back and you know, give back what he was giving me.
Yeah. He was never going to give you anything except the shtick, I don't think.
Yeah.
All right. We are out of time. This is such a pleasure.
Oh, for me too.
So happy we got to do this.
Yeah, because I listen to her all the time and I've never met her before.
Thanks to Terry Gross for being such a wonderful conversation partner and to everyone who helped organize that event. We'll be back here on Friday for a new episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR.